Capital Investment Committee will come to order March 10th. And the first item on the agenda today is, refers to a couple sheets in your packets on the history of the Capital Investment Committee and the bond authorizations that have taken place in the past. We're setting the stage for developing the criteria that we're going to talk about following. Mr. Lee, thank you for doing the preparation and the work that goes into every spreadsheet that we have and historical documents as well. Would you please begin?
Madam Chair and members, I'm working off of a couple sheets. The first one in your packet is a landscape sheet that looks like this. It says capital investment bills 1999 through 2019. This is information that the Legislative Reference Library put together, and I formatted it a little bit, but it shows the House file number, the chapter number, if a bill was enacted, the Speaker, the Capital Investment Chair, and then some notes for if there are any line item vetoes, or if it was disaster related, or if there are some other items with it. I think some interesting things to note on this spreadsheet is you can see, kind of get a sense of by the House file number, how early or how late in session some bills were introduced, and then by the chapter number, how early or late the bills were signed. And then note either the line item veto or the total veto. There's one total veto in the 2007 regular session, and then a disaster bill during a special session there. On the next sheet, this is portrait-oriented spreadsheet that comes from Minnesota Management and Budget that says historical bond authorizations. This is a look for MMB's purposes in estimating the size of the bonding bills. So some of the numbers might seem a little bit different from authorizations in bills, and that's because the total that the legislature often looks at is arrived at slightly differently than the grand total. Usually the legislature, the number that is of most interest during the legislative process is the net general obligation bonds, not the gross, because in many bonding bills there's cancellations. So in this spreadsheet, this is looking at usually at the gross authorization. You can see the year in the first column on the left, and then the governor's recommendations, the total general fund supported bonds, users finance supported bonds. These are things like the Rural Finance Authority and the MinSCU, and up until the early 2000s, University of Minnesota, one-third supported user finance bonds. And the trunk highway bonds, you'll note the large authorization in 2008 and then some large authorizations in 2017 and 2018. And then direct appropriations is usually the general fund cash spending, but it can also come from other sources. If you'll notice one odd thing, if you're looking at the old sheet, or the other sheet that I mentioned earlier, in the 2004 session, there was no bill enacted. But you see a number in this MMB sheet that shows 750 million enacted. That's because in the bill was not enacted in 2014, but in 2004. In 2005, shortly after the legislature went into session, it passed a bonding bill, and you'll see on that first sheet on line 7, House File 3, enacted as Chapter 20, that was the bonding bill mostly from 2004. And for MMB's purposes, they put part of the 2005 bill and counted it as 2004 for their sake of 10-year averaging. Then moving on to the last sheet in your packet, and that's a landscape spreadsheet that looks like this, that has colors. There's a few things here. The first column is both the...
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, you talked about 2004 and 2005, or MMB recognized that the 2004 bill actually passed in 2005, but I didn't get similar treatment in 16-17 cycle. Can you tell me why, and who should I complain to?
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Lee.
No, I noticed that too. I don't know. I think that was just a choice on the part of management and budget to not change that for rounding. So.
For you, yes. Good that you pointed it out, though. All things are not treated the same in history. As history goes by, well, all things are not necessarily not fair. But here we go. We're just putting everything into perspective. Mr. Lee.
Then, Madam Chair, members, moving on to the sheet in front of you that says 2020 capital budget. So this has a few different things. The first column is that's under amounts with the footnote is the MMB, the projects that were submitted to MMB. Then it's bills introduced. Then it's any items that were in House File 2529. And so it attempts to be as inclusive of a list as possible. That said, there are, for a single project over the course of the last 2 years, multiple bills introduced, sometimes for one project and sometimes at varying amounts. So you'll note at the very bottom of the spreadsheet for that column, there's a note saying that some of the project amounts are using a dollar figure from a bill that may not be accurate anymore because there's so many different versions of many of these projects. You can see the governor's recs on the next column and House File 2529. And then there's an additional column that's 2529 plus the governor's recommended level of some items and also some additions. The additions you can see throughout the spreadsheet are slightly grayed. On the first page, if you look at line 9 and line 10 and line 20, you'll see that those aren't introduced as amounts. These are figures that came from the Department of Administration one-page sheet during their presentation where they did an inventory of all state assets and buildings and estimated the total deferred maintenance for each agency. So on line 10, the number for the University of Minnesota is just under $2 billion of total deferred maintenance. And then there's a few other calculations that went into that. So there was a building that the university was proposing that would decrease the deferred maintenance backlog, I subtracted that from that number. And then on line 9, you can see the additional HEPR to get to that requested $200 million amount, which would be over the governor's amount. And you can see that throughout the spreadsheet. I'll make just a few really brief notes on the spreadsheet. First of which on page 5 under the Pollution Control Agency, I just want to point out that you can see the note on line 156 that there are additional appropriations for Pollution Control Agency, but they are requested in the governor's request as appropriation bonds. And then let me go a little bit further here. Then turning to page 18, right at the bottom, on line 575, In House File 2529, there was a appropriation for the Schubert Theater in Minneapolis for $550,000. That was actually enacted, so I just thought I'd highlight that. And then moving on to the last page, page 25. So a brief explanation of the totals page. So this lists all of the totals by fund. You can see GO bonds on line 748, and then a subset of GO bonds specific to local roads and bridges that essentially act just like other GO bonds on line 749, and then user financing, general fund spending or requested general fund amount, trunk highway bonding, trunk highway fund appropriation bonds, and then a grand total on line 755. And then the next three lines are sort of displayed here for purposes of the mechanics of the some of the back of the bill language necessary for figuring out how big of a bond sale or a bond bond sale expenses are necessary, and some of those more technical numbers that are in the back of the bill. But usually the number that is paid most attention to is the bottom one on line 773. That's the net GO impact. And so you can see the governor's number at about $2 billion, and then House File 2529 at 1.5, and then the 2529 plus additions at 5.744 billion, and quite a lot of those additions are the total deferred maintenance amounts. So you can see that 2529 is larger than the total requested amount, and that's mostly because of that several billion in total deferred maintenance. And this, the last column is not a bill draft that exists, and it's just a kind of showing the math of what would happen if you added those amounts in. And then I'll just make a quick note. You can see on the bottom of the page that the last note, the governor's recommendations, because the bill language isn't released yet, there are some choices in where some of the local projects were placed and how certain things were counted. So that might be different once the language is out, but this is sort of a best guess.
And everything is fluid, right? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lee, for your presentation. So how much bonding capacity is built into the current budget?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and members, the base budget assumes about $755 million in general obligation bonds, and that is arrived at as the rolling 10-year average of even and odd years that the legislature has authorized in bonding. So that's the number that MMB comes up with. So that's what's built into the budget. So essentially, if you were just to use the base budget, that would be the number where you wouldn't have to have any additional debt service. In terms of debt capacity, that more relates to the debt management guidelines. So the debt management guidelines restrict the amount of debt that can be authorized by the amount of principal that is outstanding. And under that scenario, under the most recent MMB forecast, they assumed a maximum new debt authorization within debt guidelines for the 2020 session at $3.5 billion, and then some other authorizations going into the future. But essentially, that plus high authorizations in the future would get up to the cap for debt guideline one by 2024.
Representative Tarkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Now, last year we did a limited amount of bonding. How does that impact that budget situation? Is there any carry forward from unused capacity last year?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, so yes, the legislature authorized a little over $100 million, and that was about a million less than the rolling average for the odd year. And so what that did was MMB then decreased their assumption for how much would be spent in odd years based on that 10-year rolling average. But in terms of was there money that, because the legislature didn't spend up to that, assumed about, I think, $240-250 million in the even year that is left over, no, the when the end of session budget comes out and then the February and or November and then February forecasts, because the legislature didn't enact that amount, essentially that doesn't get saved anywhere. It just kind of goes to the bottom line and is assumed going forward as being part of the general fund balance.
Okay, Representative Carlson.
Final question. So to do bonding beyond $755 million this year, we would need a budget adjustment to supply that extra resources needed to service those additional bonds.
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, the target would have to be higher than the base.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and along the lines that Representative Torkelson has been pursuing, you're giving us a lot of figures, Mr. Lee. Now, in the odd year of the biennium, well, let's just say in the first year of the biennium, the average GO bonds are how much over 10 years?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, let me just make sure I have it. So it is for the even year, $240 million. For the odd year, $755 million. And those numbers fluctuate based off of a rolling average of how much the legislature enacts. So if the legislature doesn't enact a bonding bill, that will affect that. Or if it enacts something higher, that will affect that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
So over the last 10 years for the biennium, we are just under $1 billion in an average GO bonding.
Mr. Lee.
Correct.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, I think that's pretty close. I have done a spreadsheet on this. I'd want to double check that.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I was just adding up. If it's 240 the first year and 755 the second, it's just under $1 billion. And we budget in debt service for the biennium at what amount?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, so MMB assumes that the legislature will enact a bonding bill, and that's where the 10-year rolling average amounts come in. It is not a per se recommendation to the legislature to authorize that amount, but those are the amounts that MMB assumes the legislature will authorize, because if they didn't assume some level of authorization, then you'd have to like basically assume that no bonding bill gets enacted to begin with, and then the increase over base would be quite a bit higher.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. So, Mr. Lee, the debt service that we pay is how much in the biennium?
Oh. Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Lee.
Just one moment. Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, over the 2020-2021 biennium, the debt service under the current forecast that assumes a $755 million bill this year, and kind of counting what was enacted last year, is $1.13 billion for the biennium. And then in the next biennium, it is about $1.2 billion. In addition to that, there's another category that falls under the committee's budget purview for capital projects and grants. So that's appropriation bonds, spending in cash. For this biennium, that's about $272 million. and for the next biennium, that's about $300 million. And that includes the larger items are the MHFA housing appropriation bonds, the University of Minnesota appropriation bonds, the professional sports facilities appropriation bonds, and the replacement for the tobacco securitization bonds that for the 2011 budget issue.
Thank you, Ms. Dooley.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that $750 million mark is really an arbitrary figure, just more as a placeholder, because we're going to have a bonding bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Considine, so yes, in that MMB has to make an assumption of what the bonding bill will be, and they use just the 10 years of the rolling average to as sort of the starting point to make that assumption.
Okay, Representative Considine.
In a year then when we have extremely low interest rates, it might be prudent to up that figure right away. I'm, again, looking at on a personal level, my son refinanced his house, took an extra $45,000. His payment went up $45 a month. It would seem we have the same opportunity here in the bonding bill to do a little bit more and still come out with the same debt service. Would that be a fair assumption?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Considine, I think I can't answer your question.
Oh, but, okay. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Hypothetical.
Great presentation, sorry.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, when Commissioner Franz was here, I asked a question, and I don't recall if we got an answer, so I intend to ask him again on Thursday. But I'm wondering if Mr. Lee has the answer to how much, if the governor's request was $2 billion, of new bonds, new debt, how much is coming off the books this year? How much of the bonds that we've previously sold are going to be paid off at the end of the year? So I guess, in other words, our debt capacity, if we were to go at, pick a number, $1 billion, or the governor's recommendation of $2 billion, what would our net additional debt be? Do you have that answer, Mr. Lee, or?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Juergens, I think I did see an email from the executive branch that was specific to that. I don't have it on me. I probably shouldn't speculate, but it's in the hundreds of millions of outstanding debt that then is paid off based off of the schedule of the 20-year life of the bonds. And I can find the total principal outstanding currently for general obligation bonds is about $4.3 billion, and for trunk highway bonds is about $2 billion. And then there's various other principal amounts for appropriation bonds. So just for the example of GO bonds, of that, the GO bonds that were issued in, it would have been 2010, would be coming up for refinancing, and the ones that were refinanced earlier would be the ones that would be essentially moving off the books and being defeased.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
kind of along those lines, could you give us the process as you understand it to refinancing debt? Like Representative Considine mentioned, interest rates are low now. This was a good time for debt. So what is the state's process for basically refinancing the debt that we have?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and Representative Juergens, I'll kind of give a sort of a long answer to that. So when the legislature authorizes debt, MMB doesn't immediately go and sell everything that, like, the amount of the bill. They figure out how much the projects need cash flow and at what times. And then, so irrespective of what the legislature authorizes, MMB issues debt usually once, sometimes twice a year, based off of the project needs for the next year. And then, and so each authorization will be several bonding bills worth of projects. And then when MMB authorizes the debt, They've typically structured GO debt to be last 20 years with a 10-year call feature. So something that a bond issuance that MMB goes to market in this year would have a 10-year call feature in 2030. And then if the interest rate at that time period is more advantageous, as it has been for the last few years than when the debt was originally authorized, so for example, the 2009 bond issuance, there was a better interest rate in 2019, so the state refinanced a piece of that remaining debt. And then after that refinancing, the amount of time for that, for the GO bond to be paid back that's been refinanced is still 10 years. So like the total amount is still 20 years. It doesn't extend it another 20. But that's sort of how MMB structures the debt, if that answers your question.
Okay. Representative Jurgens, we did get a answer to that question from Representative, or from Dominic
Washington,
and Ms. Nash will read that.
On June 30th, 2020, the state will have $6.338 billion in outstanding general obligation debt. We estimate selling $800 million in additional GO bonds in August for previously authorized but currently unissued debt. If the governor's bonding package is enacted, we would estimate selling 15% or an additional $304 million in bonds from that package. During FY21, we will retire $570 million in general obligation bonds. That means by June 30th, 2021, we estimate having $6.872 billion in outstanding general obligation debt, or a net increase of $534 million.
Any other questions? Mr. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Nash, could you send us that out in writing, what you just said, please?
Yes. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Lee. So going forward, how are we going to do it? Last Thursday, I had a meeting with the DFL representatives of this committee. Yesterday, during roll call, the long roll call, I had a meeting with the Republican members of this committee. And we talked just in general things of how we were going to go, how we were going to proceed. And I got the impression that we were all eager to, well, maybe not eager, but we were all ready to begin cooperating on developing a bill for the people of Minnesota from this committee. I also got the impression that, like Mr. Lee just pointed out, there have been years where the intentions were very good, but it wasn't possible to conclude with a bill. And there's always another year to go. And that's kind of like what happened last year, in a way. And there's many different directions we could go to putting the bill together. But I did receive loud and clear from both places that the chair's responsibility is to put that bill together. But that's not exactly my history at the legislature, is that I start out with a bill, or it's the dictates of the chair. to do something. I think the process is of ultimate importance, where there's ownership by committees. My first experiences at the legislature was developing committee bills with the co-author was the lead Republican on the committee. And we ended up with 132 votes. And these were finance bills. But that was a different century. And that was a different era. And here we are. With the hopes and expectations of the people of Minnesota in our hands and in our minds and in our hearts. As Representative yesterday said, Representative Jurgens yesterday said, we didn't, on our tours, we did not see any unworthy projects. But we did see some projects, I'm not quoting here, but we did see some projects that are better left to the cities or the local governments to carry out rather than the state. Yesterday when I was driving down, I listened to the news of the world. And it was not really good news, and you know it because you listened too while you were driving in or driving down or driving up or driving across. You know, the oil industry is a big question mark for the future now. Representative Hansen's predictions of crisis world over in economics. We didn't really think about that 2 months ago so much. And the country has changed overnight. Minnesota has two serious complaints about the disease that's moving the world. And yet our committee started at 8 o'clock and will finish at 9:30, and we will move on to the Thursday's meeting with still talking about the criteria of the 2020 bonding bill. But as we said on the tours and when we met the people that told us our expectations, their expectations for us to deliver. Minnesotans need help. And we have the capacity to help. And we can do whatever has been done by the majority years of bonding, or we can take a bold step forward and put a lot of money into deferred maintenance. Get rid of that so we can go forward for the children of Minnesota and the next generation in the next 20 years or 80 years. 20 years of this century is already gone. This committee, over the months that we, since we started this over a year ago, our committee has been dealing with heartache and joys and happinesses and cancer and brain surgeries and deaths and births. Representative Kogel's baby is a toddler now. Josh Heinzman's youngest is a big boy. Representative Hassan's baby isn't sleeping through the night yet. We get up every morning and we come, and sometimes we're tired and sometimes we're not, and we're sharing things together, and we will continue to do so. And we can talk and we can work out a solution for the future and address the expectations that the people gave us. The things that I saw that have to be addressed, of course, are the things that were most obvious, the emergencies. The soil erosion on the Mississippi and the Minnesota rivers, and that over 120-year-old house in North Mankato, where two more storms might have that toppling into the river. We have to address that kind of thing. But there's things that should have been addressed by the state agencies 20 years ago and 30 years ago and even longer, that haven't been addressed because it's just been passed off, because we have to get enough votes to pass a bill with 81 votes. And we have no idea in the world what the committee on the other side is going to do or has been doing. And so there's no inkling of what they're doing. And so we have to go forward and be bold. Or at least produce something, in my opinion. The emergencies have to be addressed. But what I think is an emergency is different than what Ray Dean thinks. And Representative Grosso things. And we have bills, we have considered bills. And last week's meeting that ended at 10 o'clock on Wednesday night was not the end of the requests. There are about 10 more, and I understand maybe two more after that, that we're just waiting for the revisor. It's coming down from the revisor's office. I don't know when they went to the revisor's office, but it's really an emergency, and you've got to hear my bill. So we've got maybe 12 bills left that we will hear. But how does that balance? How do the 2529s balance with the new bills that we heard last month and last week, and especially last week with the people's requests that came before us in their 4-minute time periods? But what are the criteria that we're going to use? And I really need your ideas on how we will get there. We have some ideas, of course, and that came out of the two meetings too. Some people want a sheet where we number things and use ovals and like a test. Now, I've never thought that test results
compiled gives us the best answers. I think discussion and working together gives us the best answers and understandings of what the resulting product delivers to the people of Minnesota. But if you want to do something like this, we can do it. But I do want to have a result. And I do want to have a bill from the Minnesota House of Representatives passed in 2020 in regular session. And completion by the speaker's date of April 3rd. So that's my start to this discussion. Representative Erdl.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and we we do appreciate your commitment and your efforts and your sincerity in trying to put this together. And I want to assure everyone that that our goal as well is to get a bill done. As you indicated, there are many needs that the people of Minnesota have. And particularly starting with the emergencies, we have to address them. But where we will differ is how big the bill should be. And I taught for a long time how government works, how we put a bill together. And then I got here and discovered that it's not exactly how it works. And so there are a lot of different paths to get to the end. And from my standpoint, I look at how to get there. This is what we need to do. What is the best way to get there? The best way that we can get there, which is not necessarily the best way. And so what we come up against is this. We do have all of these needs. We do have historical precedents in what we do. Can we go above those precedents? Should we go above those precedents? How much debt do we wish to encumber for the people of Minnesota? And as we look at that, just realistically, and I'll repeat a little bit what I said yesterday in the meeting that we had, a number has to come, a target has to come from leadership, House and Senate. And once we get that number, it makes our task a whole lot easier. Without that number, and frankly, the way this place works, I don't know if we can get that number until later in the session, beyond when we would like it. But that's just the realism of the place that we are in because of the various policy and political considerations that we face. That said, we have a couple of ways to go. One is that we in here agree upon a number that I believe could pass, frankly, through the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives, because you obviously need 6 Republican votes to pass a bill. And if we can't get to that number because there is not the support in our caucus to do it, it makes it very difficult to do a bill. But if we can agree to a number, then we can follow this through just as Representative Murphy would like. And you know, we have all the transparency, the work in public, the getting the putting together using the criteria that I think Representative Murphy brings up is important to follow. And it all comes together. That, of course, we're making a bold assumption here that the Senate is actually doing this too. And so far, I think they've had one meeting. So they've got a ways to go, but I remain confident that that they will do this. Now, the other way to do it is, unfortunately, the way that it in the past bienniums seems more common, and that is that the majority just passes a bill through this committee at an amount that is much higher than the House Republican caucus can accept. It then goes to the floor and is defeated, and then it comes back here and we do it again for real, and we get the bill done at the end. And so realistically, those are the two ways, the two paths that I see before us. And with a sincere desire that we do get a decent bill done that will serve the people of Minnesota, I remain hopeful that we will get a number to work with before very long.
Representative Constantine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm wondering if there are some priorities that we can all agree on as we start building a consensus. I would say, personally, I see three. Clean drinking water. I can't imagine there's anybody on the committee that isn't committed to having clean drinking water, and that we start looking at bills that provide that. The opposite end is cleaning up wastewater. We have a tremendous resource in Minnesota in water, and we have abused it for decades. And I think those would be two of my top priorities, is that we start looking at bills that deal with clean drinking water, clean wastewater. I think those fall under a lot of the emergency bills. And frankly, the third one, going back to what Commissioner Frentz said, which is the state infrastructure projects, that could threaten our bond rating. I may be the only person that's really concerned about the bond rating, but they mentioned that would have cost us an additional $48 million in just interest on the last bonding bill if we had not had that AAA bond rating. And there is nothing that irritates me more than paying money and interest. So state infrastructure projects that protect that bond rating is something that I find rather compelling. And I'm wondering if there are other things that people would like. Obviously, I don't have everybody's priorities in mind here. Those are my three, and I'm wondering if there are other folks that would like to express that we could start working on some things that they consider to be a priority. But mine would be clean drinking water, wastewater, and state infrastructure projects protect that bond rating. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to piggyback on Representative Considine, good thoughts there, and reiterating what we kind of talked about yesterday in our GOP meeting, I would love to see our projects organized into major groups like infrastructure, water quality, heaper projects, so that we can kind of get a handle on how much money are we looking at with water quality. Because I do believe, Representative Considine, I agree with you. I think we can come to consensus that those kinds of things are bipartisan. Roads and bridges are infrastructure, and we can just come with some major categories. And then kind of the other category, we talked about that yesterday, the nice things that maybe aren't emergencies. I don't know if that's called category or not, but I think that would really help us as we start sorting through to see, you know, how much money do we have in these different areas? How would we like to organize those categories? That would be a good start. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I haven't been on this committee for years and years and years. This is still a relatively new committee for me. But as I sit and listen to the requests for projects, and I think we're in this biennium up over 200 bills that we've heard, and total requests around between $8 and $10 billion, I think is the last I heard, is the to date requests that we've had. And I listened to Representative Erdahl's talk about the need for a number, a target. Certainly that those are really friendly parameters to work in and things that we understand. But I'm trying to think about this in a bigger way too. I don't think there's anybody at this table who doesn't understand that a number means dollars, dollars means spending. And I think we get stuck in the mindset of spending. And I'm trying to look at this as not just spending, but really investing. And there's a difference between spending and investing. And what has become clear to me in my time on this committee is that the state has underinvested in too many things for too long. And that is why we are seeing upwards of 200 bills in a dollar figure request between $8 and $10 billion. And we're seeing for sure emergencies bubble up. And I think both sides are talking for sure about things like wastewater, clean water. We're seeing some commonalities, and that goes back to underinvesting. And we're at a really pivotal time right now in our economy. Certainly, we're feeling a sense of uncertainty. My attitude, you know, about what this would look like today, it looks very different than it did a month ago, given what's going on with health issues. And we have what I believe to be a very artificial cap that historically the Capital Investment Committee has operated under. I haven't seen anything legislatively that limits, restricts. And as we are putting our bill together, I want to encourage people to really think about investment. Investment as a state, but for the future of our communities, our children. If we don't shore things up now, and that doesn't include necessarily the fun things, the nice things. I'm talking about basic investments that put communities on a safe and level playing field to where maybe in the future they can build out. I'm afraid we're really headed for a downward spiral. And that number, whatever we end up with, may look very different than what we're used to it looking like. But it's our responsibility to do the best we can for not just our generations today, but future generations. And we have just underinvested for so long that I want to urge, you know, don't think necessarily spending, think about investments and what that does. The other thing, Madam Chair, that I really think we need to be cognizant of is as we're figuring out this bill, clearly we heard from communities that, at least in my opinion, there are projects that may look better pushed off to a local government unit, yet tax capacity or tax base is not there for many of these communities. And I think that's an important piece to take in as we're considering these projects, because again, if we as a state don't step in and help, then we're back into the scenario of things costing more and underinvesting and just perpetuating what feels like a very downward spiral to me. And those are my thoughts.
Thank you very much. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. excuse me. I am getting better. Representative Erdahl put forward two scenarios on how we can do this. I think, of course, there are other scenarios. And if there's anything that I gather from this list of monies gone out, who it's gone out for, whether it's trunk highway supported bonds or whatever, there's nothing consistent here. Nothing consistent.
You noticed that.
I did. So for us to start from a lens of having to be consistent with something else in the past, I think is really sort of a starting off on what I would say is the wrong foot. Let's start from the point that there hasn't been any consistency for the most part over a period of 20, 30, 40 years. This goes back, a good 40 years, which can teach us a lot. Now, if we go back 2 or 3 years, we're going to get a certain type of lens. But if we take a longer view, we'll see that. Before I came in the legislature, I spent 6 years on the Capital Long Range Improvement Committee for the largest city in the state of Minnesota, Minneapolis. And we went through a process like this every year. It was a group of 33 citizens that was led by staff. And what we did is we evaluated each project on a set of metrics. And then ultimately there was an average score that was created for each of the projects based on how each of us graded them. And then we sort of created the list of priorities. And we did this without knowing how much money we had. There was no indication of how much money we could really feasibly bond and do those other types of things. And then we, the finance people say, well, here's what we believe we have. And we draw a line, for all those totals of those projects above. And then we would look at that line. And then we would start to discuss the projects that maybe were above the line that maybe shouldn't be included, and some of the projects that maybe appeared below the line that should be included. And we went through a process of discussion and negotiation that I think was a very viable way, just as is, the majority putting together a bill and the minority deciding, no, that number's too high, voting it down, and then whereas Representative Erdahl say, and then start to work on a real bill. There are other ways we can do this. And if we're going to be locked in the past, then I would just say, Chair Murphy, write us a bill. We'll look at it. It'll get passed or not get passed. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about some stuff. And then we'll figure out how to get those 6 Republican votes we need, and then we'll have a bill. That's certainly a plausible way of doing this. It's a way we've done it in the past. I've been on this committee 8 years, and it's varied a little bit, but that's kind of been it. In 2016, of course, we didn't have a bill. And as a matter of fact, in 2017, we didn't have a bill. It wasn't until the special session of 2017. So that's maybe why you didn't get credit, Representative Torkelson, because the time had lapsed out for you to get credit for that. I'm just going to throw that out there. But I also think that as we think about these emergencies and urgent needs, we also have to understand that Minnesota is a very diverse state. Our cities are very, very different. The city of Minneapolis in many ways does a pretty good job of keeping its infrastructure up. because we have that tax base and we're able to do that. You know, some other smaller towns and smaller cities don't have that tax base, and that's why we have a little bit of responsibility as a state of keeping them, keeping those towns alive, keeping those towns working, helping those individuals' lives. As we also consider this, I think we also need to consider there are two factors that help fund the state of Minnesota. One of those is income tax. We get a lot of money from income tax. So the issue of jobs becomes important in the work we do. And the other is sales tax. So the decisions we make on many of these projects are going to impact those two factors as well. So we have to sort of, you know, balance some of those things as we consider the projects and as we move through what type of income tax impact will that have. And that's in two ways, the actual building of projects and the work of the projects, but how those actually keep jobs, you know, continuously moving forward. And then, of course, sales tax. And we do make some exceptions on some of the sales tax for the particular projects relative to how those projects, building materials and things like that, are funded with their sales tax. But realizing that, you know, if they're a piece of commerce, that sales tax generated from that piece of commerce will also have impact on the state. And my voice is going, so I'm going to stop now. Thank you.
Representative Lehman.
Yes, Chair. Madam Chair. Thank you for...
My name was mentioned.
Pardon? Excuse me, Representative Lehman.
I yield.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. My name was mentioned in the previous testimony. I feel I have a right to respond. I will say clearly and concisely and factually that we did have a bill in 2016. It did pass off the House floor, and we did our job. That bill also passed off the Senate floor with an amendment. Now, the amendment, of course, caused the bill to fail to get to the governor's desk. But we did have a bill, period.
I appreciate the clarification, Representative. Representative Lehman.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate you allowing us all this time for input to you. I do agree with the thought that the chair probably has the most information and the ability to put together the first draft, and I would encourage that. But in doing that, I know yesterday we had a conversation about the fact that we have heard 200 bills. We've got so many projects. Representative Sandsteed's projected something like $8 to $10 billion in projects. It's kind of hard to get your hands around. So one of the ideas that came up yesterday, and I think it also falls in line with maybe what Representative Dean said in having that list of priorities or criteria, is some of these projects are really ready, and they have been ready for some time. Some of these projects have been presented to us more than once, and are really now urgent because they've been waiting and they're ready. So if there is a way for staff, staff have a lot of good, they've asked a lot of questions, went on all the tours, to tell you and tell us which, you know, kind of on a readiness factor, because we, you know, we don't have $8 to $10 billion. And so that would be a quick way of getting the money out there where it's needed right now, right away. And then just as a little piece to that, I just want to support what I also heard today is, in addition to readiness, is a capacity. Some projects have a matching amount, others don't. It would be good to know, you know, which projects actually have the capacity to be done separately, or which really needs a state investment in order to make it happen. So those are just two things I think that I would advise that would be really helpful in decision making. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to continue on the same line of Representative Sandstad with regards to investment, I want the committee to consider, you know, the investment that we have made and communities throughout the state of Minnesota, especially in a state where, you know, I think we're considered economically one of the top state in the nation. But when we look at the disparities that we are seeing in our communities of color are lagging behind. And I think that when we look at investment and capital investment, we should really think about expanding beyond geographic communities, but actually look at, you know, cultural and racial communities and how are we investing in them. And I have heard from different community groups from districts throughout the state that are from Democratic and Republican districts about how they are reaching out to their local electives and they are not getting the response that they need or are not getting the attention that they deserve. And so when we think about the investment that we're making and as we move forward in the process, I would urge the committee to consider what are the investment that we are making into these cultural and racial communities so that we all could thrive as a state of Minnesota and not leave anyone behind. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, a lot of great things are being said here, and again, I think my brain still wraps around the size of the comprehensive bill, and Representative Considine again acknowledges the low interest rates, which has been a focus of the argument for bringing forward as large a bill as our state capacity can manage. I still feel like one question that I was asking in the committee meetings prior to this with various commissioners of what the impacts of our labor force and what the impacts of the costs of these projects are going to be in relationship to the size of a bonding bill. I think we're all very supportive of some very specific projects, but even if we so narrowly focus our attention to, say, clean water, is there a limited amount of workforce in that arena where if we overfund that specific subcategory, the costs of all of those projects go up, you know, 20-30%, which more than negates the low interest rates that we've been talking about. So I still feel like, and I don't know if it's kind of briefing the Department of Labor of what my question or what my request for information is and having separate meetings on that individually or in committee. I just do feel like we, as we discuss the size of a bill, we're hearing throughout the rest of the state of Minnesota the workforce shortages and the impacts that that's having. And it doesn't just impact the projects that we're talking about in this room. It's going to also impact the private sector and the cost of the jobs and the projects that are being done in the private sector as well. And can we handle that? Will there be negative consequences that we need to be vetting and talking through in the legislature now so that we can address that and maybe more appropriately balance the bill within each of these subcategories so that we can maximize that workforce and make sure that we're not overspending in one area on projects that are going to deliver fewer results with taxpayer dollars.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. I really enjoyed being on the committee a couple cycles here now, and you know, the various chairs and efforts, and I find it super fascinating. And you know, we have a beautiful state, and we've been from one end to the other just this year again, and just through the years, and just seeing so many. You know, I got to be honest, there's been other years that some projects really have not, you know, you'd get on the bus and we'd all kind of look at each other and we'd kind of go, well, maybe not that one. I can think of one building in particular we all kind of talked about. But in your introduction, Madam Chair, you spoke that that really isn't the case this year. And, you know, we've seen so many of them on the tours and in presentations here. And, you know, it's a it's going to be a difficult task because there really isn't clear. I mean, perhaps there is some, but just really not as clear as there might have been other years. So that makes it tough. And then so then you start thinking of how do you put a bill together, and certainly what Representative Erdahl mentioned in his comments were pretty true. And how, you know, I studied politics in college, and the reality is, you know, it's nothing like this, of course, absolutely nothing. So his comments were spot on. You know, sometimes I think, well, maybe it'd be better to watch like a MacGyver show or something, you know, because you're put in a situation and you're going to figure it out and throw it together and put some duct tape here and a you know, I mean, it's probably not the right thing, or maybe a sausage factory or something, you know, where you just kind of throw it all together and it just kind of comes together. But I guess the point is, or that I'm trying to make, is that, you know, it's the reality of it is probably going to be a little more difficult, Madam Chair, than but out of respect to your request, I've been lucky enough to serve on other committees, as all of us have, and I kind of lean towards the Lessard-Sams committee, and maybe you might consider trying this. It's we could put it on a database, maybe three scenarios, maybe the high number that you've mentioned, three, or this more ambitious, realizing the need, the $3 billion number, three and a half, maybe the governor's number two, maybe the number we've heard today from former Chair Erdahl, you know, around a billion. But you could, what they do in there, you'd be in a computer program, it's kind of similar to your sheet, and then you just actually divide the money up and you come up with a bill. So I think you could talk to them. They're right down the hall here, and just ask them how they do it, and we could just enter all those in, and we all could do it. I'd recommend that it's that we each do it, and it's anonymous. You know, that way people that don't really as much want to participate or have their names attached, but each person would do it, hopefully in good faith, and you'd come up with maybe three scenarios. And then what they do in that committee is they come up with the chair then comes up with the chair's bill based on those numbers. And it does vary sometimes a little with the chair's bias or goals, you know, whatever that might be. And so that's a scenario that might help you achieve your goal. But, you know, I was thinking originally that, you know, like in years past it was a little easier because you'd see bills that were really bad. So you could kind of maybe put a list and say, oh, those are bad. And then we've heard today that these are must-haves, like some of the water things. So those are easy, and then you kind of build from there. But I guess my advice would be maybe to look at walk down the hall and talk to Lessard-Sams and see if that computer model might be something that we all could participate in. And again, not attach names to it, but each committee member would have a opportunity, and then you would look at that and develop your own bill from there. But anyways, that's just kind of a comment.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I think in your comments you referenced that things change overnight. And I think that's where we are as a state and as a country. And as elected leaders, we have to demonstrate adaptability. And as we do that, the choices we make could be right or they could be wrong, but we are empowered by the voters to make those choices. And so we have to be flexible when the conditions change. And I believe a week from now, the conditions may change, be more, even more different than they are today or than they were a week ago. Maybe they're not, but it would be cautious. It would be prudent to be cautious on what can happen economically. And so the world right now where contractors may be full of work may not be the world and by the time the session is done. If large events are canceled, if conferences and conventions are canceled, if hotels and restaurants and coffee shops and the service industry cuts back, then what do we have but public works projects? We used to call this public works rather than capital investment because it would put the public to work and be working for the public. And so I think we have to think of this as a public works bill, and the heaper and the napper and the things that are not shovel ready but are paintbrush and polishing ready that are immediate jobs that could put people to work during the summer and fall on public infrastructure, I think we should prioritize. I also think that in addition to the size of the bill, a bill is judged and has been judged almost immediately on a 50-50 analysis. 50% greater Minnesota, 50% metro. Where do the projects, what is the outcome be? And that 50-50 world does not exist. We are in a one-third, one-third, one-third world of greater Minnesota, suburban regional centers, and the core cities. And I think in 2020, instead of a 20th century view of outcomes, we have to start looking at things as a 2020 view of current reality, where those investments are made. Because frankly, some areas of the state have been ignored. So I think a large heaper, napper, fixing stuff component is there, and then emergency needs and assessments that have an outcome that is balanced is important.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I want to clarify, you know, something that I may or may not have said earlier in terms of being able to give you a number and put something together today. I don't know that number. I was being hypothetical. I have not been given a number by anyone that, you know, I believe would satisfy my caucus today. That time will come, hopefully sooner rather than later. And I do believe that there is a desire in my caucus to get the bill done. I would hope that when we eventually do that, it's going to be more than just six Republicans. You know, I want this to be a bill that, you know, more than half of the caucus can vote for. Keep in mind, there are some that just don't ever vote for bonding bills, and that's reality. But there is hopefully going to be a bill when we do have a number that I don't have today that can get those votes. Just a few other items. I don't think, unless someone can clarify this, that we have 8 to 10 billion in requests. On the sheet, it's still 5.7 billion in requests. Perhaps when I'm done, if Ms. Nash or the chair can clarify that. Now, regarding Representative Considine's comments and Representative Dean's, I think generally we are going to be in agreement as to how this money should be spent, invested. And that is in these, you know, larger areas where, again, the state of Minnesota owns property. We own buildings. It is our responsibility to take care of the things that we own. And that's basically what this is all about. But it will come down to, in this biennium, how much? Okay, if we have you know, $350 million in HEPA requests, are we going to do $350 million? Or is it going to be $300 or $250? I mean, that's where part of this discussion is going to come from. And more specifically with Representative Dean's comments, remember that a lot of these things that we are talking about that I think we will be in agreement about, PFA, local roads and bridges, the HEPR, the entities that put these lists together already have rated them. PFA is rated. Local roads and bridges are rated. The University of Minnesota and our state colleges and universities have given us their list of priorities. So to some extent, a lot of what we are talking about doing is done for us. There are other areas that we are going to have to do some prioritization. But I think we are going to be largely in agreement on these large buckets of money where we may be doing our spending. Also, there's another tax that, you know, you mentioned, you did not mention property taxes. And that plays in largely as well. Because if the state of Minnesota, for example, does not step in and do some of these projects, local entities will have to do them themselves. We have streets in many of our greater Minnesota and urban centers where where under those streets we have pipes that were installed in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and they're breaking, and they need to be fixed, and that's partly what PFA does. And if we don't do them, then the taxpayers of those local communities will, and their property taxes will increase. I guess those are the main points that I wanted to make in my little summary here today, but I think as we go through the process, we need to consider those things.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before we run out of time, I want to go off topic just a little bit and acknowledge the pages that are sitting in today and welcome you all to the Capitol. I hope you enjoy your week. There's not a lot.
They having, should. What should be them? More exciting than this?
Just about anything.
There's not a lot that can be said that hasn't already by my colleagues at this table, but there are, you know, a couple things that have come to mind, and I think that we can agree on categories. I think we can agree that wastewater treatment is important. I think we can all agree that HEPA projects are important. And as Representative Erdahl just said, on many of those lists, the work is done. The priority lists have already been compiled, and we can allocate an amount and just go down the list and see how far down the list that amount of money will get us. So that's where our work comes into play, but a lot of the prioritization has already been done. We've heard about the jobs that are created as a result of a bonding bill, and I don't think that you should create a bonding bill, pass a bonding bill, for the purpose of creating jobs. I think the jobs that are created are a benefit of it, but you fund a project because the project makes sense, not because of the jobs that it will create. That's just a benefit of it. And I want to make sure that we keep that in mind as well. And Madam Chair, just one final thing. I will listen on Thursday when Commissioner Franz is here to talk about the process that the governor went through. And it's important to have the governor on board because ultimately we need the governor's signature. But as we talked about yesterday, the governor can only sign what we send to him. So this will be our bill if and when we get to that agreement. And I would just want to make sure that we are keeping that in mind, that this is a process. However the sausage gets made at the end of session or whenever this comes to be, we've put in our time. We've visited these communities across the state. We sat here till 10 o'clock last week hearing 40 bills. I mean, that has to count for something. The work that we put in has to count for something. And in the end, I'm hopeful that we'll get a good bill that, as Representative Erdahl said, doesn't just get the 6 needed votes from this side of the aisle, but many more.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. Representative Erdahl.
No, I did turn my phone down. I can't help it. This
turn it off.
I did.
Silent mode.
Representative Juergens, Liz Connor is coming. I'm not sure that Commissioner France is coming, but we'll tell her to talk to him before she comes. And that's Thursday. If you want to start the process on a 3x5 card, you list it. Projects that definitely should be funded, not more than 12. That would be a helpful start. If on another card you had 3x5, 10 projects that just can't make it, that would be helpful. And if you titled the card, yes, and the other card, untitled,
Just say no.
I would appreciate receiving those cards. You did really well today in thinking. Representative Nornes, Representative Salk, you have a different message, and I hope you'll share it with us.
Not today,
but your day is coming, day after tomorrow. It's your big chance. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.